You have to take it as good news. Obviously, we're on top of the Justin Fields stuff. Hoff and Dove diving into all the press conference stuff, all the tweets. So we just played some of the Aaron Glenn sound before, and it's a toe. Who knows what it means? Obviously, a lot better than, you know, patella tendon or an Achilles. You got to take it as a lot of good news there. But it also does remind you, and you don't get this with any other sport, the fragility of training camp and, like, the tension that you go through. It could have easily been Justin today. Not that Justin's a top 10 quarterback, although I am intrigued to watch him play. But I promise you, some radio host in some market in America at some point over the next month is going to be on the air, and there's going to be the alert, you know, the Schefters, whomever. So-and-so caught it off the field, worst-case scenario, you know, fear, torn Achilles, blah, blah, blah. And then you get the confirmation out for the year. And it completely changes the dynamics of that team season. That is football, and that sucks. And it looks like we, at least for now, averted one of those disastrous bullets. And maybe this is the starting point. You want to spin it positively here? First positive is not out for the year. And the next positive here is, you know, Aaron Glenn comes in, and instead of, you know, going down and getting carted off and not coming back this season, oh, maybe he's back in a week or so. Maybe he's back in a couple of days. Maybe it's the luck of AG that's going to at least change this the profile of this sad sack, you know, program. I don't need to lay it on too thick. You guys know where we stand with the Jets. The Yankees, well, here's where I stand with the Yankees very briefly before I get back to these calls here. Rock bottom last night. Absolutely, unacceptably gross. It's so far below the most basic level of acceptance for a major league professional baseball player defensively. And last night was not the first time we saw that. They've had errors every game this series. They could have had five last night. I honestly thought Vivas should have made that play. So it doesn't even matter at this point whether it's four, whether it's two or three or four. It's the same thing. This is not Little League here. Just the Yankees, to me, they had to. They didn't receive it before last night, all right? They have to know now we are broken in some spots that we must repair. And I'll tell you this, like, yeah, of course, you know, Suarez is bat. He's red hot, and he could come here and hit 13 home runs in 2 months and hit a bomb in the World Series or ALCS. Of course, he's a home run hitter, right? And he could really change the profile of this team. But, you know, the more you watch last night and the more you watch this series and the previous series against Toronto when they lost four straight and the series up in Boston, whatever it was, a month and a half or so ago, forget the exact date, they made just a ton of mistakes there on the bases. Remember that? Dominguez, et cetera. I think that somebody like Suarez, to me, is just less appealing. I mean, if we're going to look at somebody who you hope is going to hit home runs, I'd rather go and get Ryan McMahon. Yeah, I'm going to hope that he hits home runs, but I'm not going to have to hope that he makes a basic play at third base. Like, I know Ryan McMahon's an elite fielder. I know that. The numbers back it up. Everybody knows that. Now, Colorado thin air, you know, hitting 2-0, whatever, strikes out a lot. So does Suarez. I get it, but maybe you just put him in Yankee Stadium. He gets hot. At least he's going to catch the ball. That's my point. Any move that should be made, it should not be with the intention of just a sole focus on, okay, this guy's going to hit fifth and protect, you know, this guy and this guy. He's got to be able to play October type of baseball. And Suarez does not. He doesn't. All right, let me get Craig in New Haven, BT and Sal on the Fan. What's up, Craig?
How you doing, BT?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So I got an opinion on Volpe, but just real quick, Trent Grisham, He's like the kind of guy that I think every team needs to win a World Series. He's like a role player. I think he's great, and I wish he was on my team. So you guys were talking about him earlier. I think he's just he's a perfect piece if you want to win a World Series.
I love him. I love what he does, especially when you know that he's making $5 million, and
he's a role player, and they don't talk about him enough, but anyways, so the thing with Volpe is, so I'm a Red Sox fan, but I watch the Yankees and the Mets. I'm in Central Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a hater, man. I watch all the teams. I love baseball.
Okay.
But I think the thing with Volpe is, you know, He reminds me of a couple of guys in the 80s from the Red Sox, Marty Barrett and Jody Reed. You probably remember those guys.
I know, of course. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think once the Yankees start realizing that he's more of a, maybe like a 7 or an 8 man, and, you know, he's not going to be a superstar, I think the sooner the Yankees can start building around that. I think what they're trying to do is build around him at shortstop, and I don't think that's where he belongs. I think he belongs at second base at some point, maybe not this year, but next year. And I don't think he's ever going to be the hitter that they also think he's going to be. I think that's what's kind of holding the Yankees up as well, and I think he's starting to feel that pressure. But he just reminds me of a guy, like, he's going to be a good, like, a solid second baseman, gold glover, but I don't think he's going to be the hitter that the Yankees really think he's going to be, and I think that's what's just holding up the development of the entire team.
Correct. Well, no, you lost me there. I don't think that Volpe's rough year is holding up the development of the entire team. I do agree with the other stuff there. He might be a second baseman. Now, if that comes, we ever get to that point, you know, based on his first round status and that he's from here, you know, maybe Volpe is on a different team playing second base. And I hope not. I hope he's here for a long time. And I'm rooting for him, still believing him. You know, not as much as I did the day that he was drafted, obviously, because we're now, you know, 2 3/4 of the way in, and there's a lot of problems with his game. We know that. So I do think he profiles probably more as a second baseman. I don't think that his lack of development's like killing he's not the only problem. Now, right now he's less of a solution than he is a problem. And that in itself inherently is a problem when you're a first round pick. But the other thing that I said the other day too is, hey guys, let's just call for what it is. With all due respect, he may have just been overdrafted. Let me get John in Pittsburgh, BT and Sal, all the fan. What's up, John? Free Odyssey app.
Hey, BT, good morning, man. Hope you're doing all right. Two really quick points and questions for the Yankees and the Jets, as I'm fans of both teams. You know, obviously, Rodon and Fried, I'm big fans of them, but they've had really down months. I think I saw in the last 8 starts for Rodon, they've lost 6 of those games. And Fried, like you mentioned, had a really, really tough last month. My question about the Yankees is Peraza the worst Yankee that you can think of in recent memory?
No. I think Vivas might be right next to
him.
I don't know.
And my question for you about the Jets piece, I mean, yeah, just a toe injury, but as you know in football, these toe injuries linger, and when you got a running quarterback, and that's the best thing he can do. I live here in Pittsburgh. I'm a Jets fan, born and raised in the East Coast, but my wife's family's got season tickets for the Steelers, so I've actually seen Fields play in the last 2 years. The best part of his game is the run game, obviously.
By far.
He is just like every other Jets quarterback. Holds on to the ball too long.
I know.
Makes really, really bad decisions.
Yeah.
I know you're optimistic, like we all are, but I'm numb to it at this point after 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, this team is heading towards the number one overall pick, but you know they'll screw that up.
John, hold on, John.
They'll take a tight end with the 4th overall pick next.
I don't think anything's possible, although they just took a tight end and they got him signed. So I don't look at, and there's been many Jet teams where I have looked at, like, all right, picking first, picking second, what quarterback's coming out. I don't look at this collection of Jets from a talent perspective as a team that's going to be vying for the first pick. I mean, and if so, it's just a disaster of a season. I think the Jets actually have a lot of talent.
I know, but you just heard what Coach Glenn just said. I mean, he was just hyping up Tyrod. So as much as we think this is going to be a minor thing, it's the Jets. We're not lucky enough for this, guys. This is like Jets. You know, Fields getting hurt in the first practice,
second,
with no pad,
yeah,
is like the second. It might be one of the most Jets things ever. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, John. Yeah, I mean, geez, I wish he was wrong with most of that stuff. You know? But I can't, you know, it's funny. I was going to say, I can't really, how do you disagree? Except the part about the first overall pick. Like, the Jets' own line is much better than it used to be. The defense is obviously, they've got a lot of weapons. You know, Garrett Wilson's a stud, different coaches, special teams should be better, fewer penalties, blah, blah, blah. Just trying to convince myself, Dovey. going to be a fun fall. Yep. And there's a ground ball that whoever's playing third base boots it. And the Guardians push another run across, or whomever it is. You know. And Tyrod Taylor flushed from the pocket. Ugh. I can't look at that kind of fall.
I, all of a sudden, I'm in a doctor's office, and all I see is a text from Sean Morash, who's supposed to be on vacation. And all it says is, Justin Fields.
Yes, but he's not on, like, go away, I'm across the world vacation like you were on.
That's true.
He's just hanging out on the island.
It's a staycation.
Yes.
So he texts Justin Fields, and my initial thought was, is this guy really going to make fun of a Justin Fields training camp interception? Mm. Or is it something worse? And so I see what everyone else sees on social media. If you didn't, I'll describe it. And that is Justin Fields is down. He's being carted off.
Right.
So my brain tells me, wait a second, there's no contact here. There's no tackling here.
Mm-hmm.
So if Justin Fields is down, it's a non-contact injury.
And that's a bad thing.
A horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a torn ACL. It could be a torn Achilles. It could be anything that's really, 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 really bad. Really bad. And so now, as I'm in this doctor's appointment, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm thinking about veteran quarterbacks. I'm thinking of Tommy DeVito. I'm thinking of Tyrod Taylor. My brain is going through 150 different things.
You'd have been all right with Tyrod Taylor.
I agree
with
you.
You'd be fine.
So, yes, I think the Jets are equipped to not have a drop-off, if any drop-off, with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. My concern around Tyrod, who I'm a fan of, is him staying healthy. So I would assume, yeah, I'll get 5 good weeks out of him, and then he'll be hurt. And then my quarterback is Adrian Martinez or Tommy DeVito, who they pick up off the practice squad of the Giants. So my brain is racing. So I'm nervous. I'm like, I'm not even checking social media. I'm going to wait till my guy AG tells us what's going on. So I go on to YouTube. Aaron Glenn's about to speak. Would you guys like to listen to how the Aaron Glenn press conference began? Because I don't think this is getting enough attention.
Right, I do, but
he
go ahead.
He caused me to I almost drove off the road listening to this because, again, Justin Fields went down with an injury. We don't know what it is, so we're like, all right, AG, tell us the Justin Fields update. Here's Aaron Glenn.
Good morning. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and knock this out now. Obviously, Tyrod went down with a toe injury on his right, on the right side. But Justin went down with a toe injury on the right side of his foot.
So before I could even digest it's a toe injury, I'm like, what?
Right. One of those black quarterbacks we have went down with a toe injury. It's all, you know what I meant. You know what I was talking about.
I thought I knew what he meant. And then I'm like, did everyone else screw this up? Like, did everyone think it was Justin, but it's really Tyrod? And I don't want to make it like I'd be okay with Tyrod getting hurt. I think he's a really valuable backup. But, dude, I was so that 5 second period, my head was exploding.
Right, because you didn't know what was happening.
I thought I was being swerved.
Right.
Like, what?
But Tyrod Taylor's fine, healthy, and for now. And who knows how long this is going to put Justin Fields out for. But originally, I thought it was a big toe because when you, again, you heard it was turf toe, not what it ultimately was. Turf toe is usually your big toe. Like, you just stub it into something, you kick somebody's foot, or you get stepped on the wrong way, or fallen on the wrong way, you twist that big joint, and it frustrates you. It's painful more than anything. But then you hear it's a dislocated toe, but it's not the big toe.
Right, it's another toe.
It's whatever, I don't know if it's the middle toe, or the pinky toe, who knows?
Do they all have names, those toes?
I think so, right? The ring toe can't be the ring toe.
Does because each you can't put toe a, have a name?
You don't put a ring on it. Like, this is your ring finger because you put rings on it, but you don't put rings on toes, so it can't be a ring toe.
I have the answer. Each toe.
Pinky toe, I know. Big toe, I know. Middle toe, I guess.
Each toe has a name. You've got the big toe, also known as the hallux toe. You've got the index toe. You've got the middle toe.
What's the index toe? The second one?
The index toe is the second toe.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it. Just like the index finger.
Correct. Then you've got the middle toe, like the middle finger.
Which makes sense.
Then you've got the ring toe.
It is not called the ring toe.
Why would I make this up?
Because why would you put a ring on your freaking toe? It is not a ring toe.
That's what I'm looking at.
That's nonsense.
This is AI from the internet.
That's why, because AI is stupid.
No, I'm literally looking at like every kind of website possible.
It is not called the ring toe. There's no way. I refuse to believe that.
It's called the ring toe or the fourth toe. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. I'm telling you.
The fourth toe I would buy. The ring toe? Seriously?
I'm reading this.
How many dudes are wearing rings on their toes right now?
That's not the point. It's just what it's named.
It is the point.
Sometimes you name something.
How many
guys
are wearing rings on their fingers right now? I got mine on.
Me too.
There you go. Huh? You got yours. You're not old enough yet. Connor, yeah, you too. Keep searching. But we got rings on. No, I have a ring on my toe.
Bro, I'm on like five different websites now. It's called the ring toe.
That's so stupid. Mm-hmm.
It's also called the fourth toe. You could call it the fourth toe or you can call it the ring toe.
I'm starting a campaign. It's got to be the fourth toe.
Okay.
The ring toe makes no damn sense.
And then the pinky toe is also called the little toe. So it's got two.
We can call that the pinky toe.
So if it's not
that's
the big...
Harlem Knights.
That's true. If it's not the big toe, what toe would be less detrimental to Justin Fields?
I would say the index toe.
Okay.
Because it's not the big toe. But of all those toes, I would say the index toe. Because it's probably getting a lot of use. Because it's right next to the big toe.
Uh-huh.
I think the middle toe and the pinky toe, I mean, those are probably like whatever.
Now the Jets.
Either way, I think it's just a pain thing.
Right. And the Jets, at least they haven't said it. Because Aaron Glenn was very evasive, if that is the right word, in terms of how serious it was. He probably didn't know at the time, too. It was right after the injury. Mm-hmm. But all indications, Rich Samini even reported, is they're not worried. That he should be ready for week one against the Steelers. So all is good. So then my question to you, without being a jerk, because Justin's my QB. He's my QB1. I don't want to insult him. Do you really need to get carted off?
No.
For a toe issue?
No.
It feels
they probably
like...
thought it was worse than it was. Because he's got a shoe on. Like, you can't see it. It's just like, oh, my toe.
My toe!
Exactly.
My toe!
I wasn't even trying to do that.
One more hill to climb, baby!
But good job. But at the end of the day, it's just the toe. It's not even the big toe. So he should have limped off.
It's my quarterback.
Don't talk about my quarterback.
So you kind of agree that this was more dramatic than it needed to be?
Yeah, just limp off. It's all good.
I'm just relieved because, and it's not because I think that Tyrod Taylor is such a downgrade from Justin Fields. That's not what it is.
Yeah. The we reason, don't know what Justin Fields is.
That's, right. You hit it. It's the idea that going into the start of this season, there is that possibility that Justin Fields on his third team with a new coaching staff, still being incredibly young, is going to put it all together.
Right, and wanted.
Yes.
Because, let's face it, in Pittsburgh, he was brought in to be the backup and not necessarily wanted to be the starter. They wanted Russell Wilson, kind of like the Giants this year. They want Russell Wilson to be that guy. And so when Justin Fields took over, he was all right. Won some games. As soon as Russ was healthy, he just gave it back to him.
And we never knew, like, could Justin Fields put it all together? Right. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks over the last couple of years, not that they're Patrick Mahomes, but jump to second and third teams and be really good. I mean, want to talk about Baker Mayfield? Want to talk about Geno Smith?
Right.
Want to talk about Sam Darnold?
But Baker was always good. He just got a bad... The Browns just did him dirty.
I get it. Like, all of these scenarios are not the same, and I get that they're all different circumstances.
But your point works.
Like, yeah.
Just because you, let's call it a fail, or don't pan out. Let's call it don't pan out. You don't pan out in your first stop as a quarterback doesn't mean that you're not going to be successful.
Right. Like, there is hope, and I'm not saying it's an incredibly high hope, and I'm not saying it's like 80% likely, but there is a chance that the Jets found something with Justin Fields. And 5 years from now, he's the quarterback of the team. Like, I'm not saying that's likely, but it's a possibility. If he was ever lost for the season and we were sitting through a year of Tyrod Taylor and Adrian Martinez and adding Tommy DeVito or acquiring Kirk Cousins or whatever the heck you want to come up with, it would basically be just kind of getting through the year until you find your guy. Now, that may ultimately be what the Jets are doing. Like I said, there's no guarantee Fields is the answer. But part of our hope in 2025 is maybe it is Justin Fields. So I'm happy for him, obviously, as a human that he's healthy. But I'm also happy for us as Jet fans because we want to have that hope, that possibility that Justin Fields can be that guy. And hopefully this toe issue doesn't affect, like he could be ready week one. Hopefully it doesn't affect him week one, especially considering running is a big part of his game.
Right.
And is going to be a big part of his game considering the way the Jets are going to run this offense. So crisis averted. You think he's ready for week one?
I think he's back next week.
So you think he plays in preseason games?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Nobody plays in preseason games anymore. So it's hard to predict that he's going to be okay for a preseason game.
Yeah.
But I do think he'll be back on the field next week.
That was crazy. What a day. Mm-hmm. I thought he was I'm texting these guys. Mm-hmm. Tommy DeVito's going to be on the team. He tore his ACL. I was fearing the worst. And luckily, it's okay. Right? A little scare, but it's okay. get to your calls. 888-808-1019. Artie's in Brooklyn. What's up, Art?
Hey, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you,
How's
man.
How's it going, Deke?
All's good.
So, Deke, I saw his little video there on the Jets, giving some positive love to for AG and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then, Av, yesterday you said that the Jets were definitely going to have a better record than the Giants.
Yes.
Baltic didn't say, though, if you had a question of who's a better team, the Jets or the Giants right now, player-wise, which team would it be?
Player-wise? I think it's relatively close. Like, I think the Giant defense has certainly closed the gap from last year, where I would have said it's not very close with the Giants. But I think, you know, Abdul Carter, I mean, I can't deny what the expectations are for him.
Right.
I can't deny that.
Well, let's do it by position. So you do it by the defensive front, I would go with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Go with.
I can't argue that.
Second level, I'd go the Jets. The secondary.
Well, I mean, they have, if Sauce Gardner is what he was 2 years ago.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
If
we don't know what Deontay Banks is after the year he had last year.
But we do know Paul Sanadebo. And, well, he was hurt. So
right.
We also, it's weird. I'd probably have to go the Jets.
It's the Jets, but it's close. Like, I'd be the first to say the it's been cut down. Here's where I think the Jets have an edge on the Giants big time.
Offensive line.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
I have
skill position players. It's probably the Giants.
It's close.
I'm going to give Slayton, because Darius Slayton is a really good player.
Sure, sure.
And I can't say everybody else in the Jets receiver room are really good players.
Right.
Like, they're good, but they're not. So I'm.
How about the quarterbacks?
That's the thing. Right? Do we know, really?
It's close. All I know is
one is young and unproven. The other one is getting older, proven, but it has not been good the last couple of years.
Right. And the Giants do have at least that little treasure trove hiding where, hey, if things don't go good with Russ, we open up the box. We see what Jackson Dart is.
Right.
Jets don't have that. The big difference, I think, between the Jets and the Giants, and why I confidently said that yesterday, is the schedule.
Okay, what about the coach?
What about the coach?
We didn't get to the coaching yet. It's impossible to judge. You can't even do it right now.
It's a loaded question.
Right. Like, we have no idea. We know Aaron Glenn is a good defensive coordinator.
Right.
Because he did some really good things in Detroit over all those years, even though some of those years where they were bad, those defenses were pretty good. We have no idea what he's going to be like as a head coach.
Zero clue. And I even think Brian Daboll, there are major questions, because year one, he was brilliant. He was coach of the year. Year two was a disaster.
Right.
So what is Brian Daboll? But the reason I have a lot of confidence is just pound for pound the schedule. And so I think the Jets are probably, and we haven't made our official win predictions, I'm kind of leaning towards an 8-win Jet season, kind of in that area, which, by the way, would be the most wins they've had in a long time. And I told you, I think the Giants are winning 3 or 4 games. And that doesn't mean they're going to be awful, even though that's a bad record. Right. I think they may lose a lot of really close, hard-fought games. But I don't think it's crazy to say the Jets are going to have a better record. I asked Tommy yesterday. He would not, like almost refused to answer it. And finally, he's like, the Giants. Tiki, you refused to answer it. You said you need to watch them in training camp.
Yes.
So I'm giving you 2 weeks.
Specifically, the Giant-Jet joint practice.
So you're going to determine it at the joint practice?
Yes.
That's going to be dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get a microphone in your face as you're leaving the joint practice and saying, all right, Tiki, what's your opinion?
What day is that? That's the first?
I don't know. You tell me. You tell me what it is.
Or is it? It's not the day we're there. I know that.
I think it's the day before we're there. We're actually going to do our Giants show July 31st, MLB trade deadline. It'll be a mixing of those two big events. I think Giants-Jets is the day before. And just to give you perspective on the schedule stuff, and I know that that changes, and it's the NFL, and it's crazy. I get it. We all get it. The strength of schedule that the New York Giants are facing is number one in the NFL in terms of difficulty.
Which is insane, because they were not anywhere close to being a number one team. No, the joint practice is the 13th.
Oh, August 13th. August 13th. Further from now.
Yeah.
The Giants' opponent winning percentage, just based on last year, and again, I get it, it could change, is 574. It is number one. It is the worst. The Jets are actually sixth from the bottom in terms of schedule strength, winning percentage of 460.
This is based on last year.
Correct. That matters. There's only 17 of these.
Yesterday, just an absolute scare was put through the entire Jet universe. And of course, we were on the air when Justin Fields hurt his foot. It was described as a lower leg injury.
Right.
But now it's turned out to be a foot injury, a toe injury, specifically, and he dislocated his right big toe. Now, for a right-handed quarterback like you, that's important.
It's you're going to plant that foot every time you drop back, no matter if it's a drop back pass, a play action pass, the right foot's going to be the plant foot for him. And you dig it into the ground to brace yourself so you can throw it harder, but or better. But when I heard this news, I was actually out on the practice field with the Giants. And somebody said something, they carted him off. I said, oh, my God, really?
Yeah, we felt bad. We were actually here, too. We had the same feeling you did.
It's terrible because I saw him in Pittsburgh. I watched him in Chicago. And then when he came up here, when they decided to sign him, I said, that is the perfect spot for him. Because Aaron Glenn and the offensive coordinator who came from Detroit, they have a special plan for him. It's going to be really built all around his skill, and it's going to fit him perfectly.
And it should. That's what they should be doing.
Well, of course. And so it's all. And I saw him interviewed about two or three times during the offseason. I could tell he was so happy.
And so excited, yeah.
And it took everything he had not to kind of say bad things about everybody. He might have said a few things about Pittsburgh. But I didn't hear it.
I mean, we all have those emotions. You know, yeah. You felt those when you were, you know, let go by the Giants at the end. I felt that way when I left the Jets. We all have the emotion of like, oh, they don't want me. How could they not want me? Or, you know, that's just a normal feeling. And I think today it's even more amplified because of social media and everything else. So anyway.
But yes. my point being, he was in, you know, and quarterbacks are judged so poorly because they just look at stats or whatever, but look where he was and who was around him and who was coaching him.
Yeah.
And it was tough to do or to really see his skill to the level where it really fits the offense and the team fits him. And, you know, the Jets have a lot of good players.
I know they do. Now,
and that offensive line they got was going to be, I think.
And their running back is stacked, and it was going to take a lot of pressure off of him. And plus, eventually he'll come back and he'll be a quarterback that Jet fans haven't seen in a long time. And that is an athletic quarterback that can create offense and create first downs and all that other stuff that, you know, that they haven't seen, that you see from other quarterbacks around the league, like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. You know, these guys, you know, he's that kind of athlete is what I'm saying. I'm not saying he's that type of football player or that type of quarterback, but he is that type of athlete. And I think Jet fans will like him when they see him when he finally gets back.
I think so too.
Did you ever have a dislocated toe or anything?
No.
How about turf toe?
No, I never had that either.
You never had that either. So, depending on what the diagnosis is and how severe this is, it could be the 2 to 4 week injury, which is what they're saying now, meaning day to day, which means he would be back by the start of the regular season. I don't know if he would play in a preseason game or not. Most likely not. If the extent of the injury is worse, it could be it could require surgery. I don't think it's going to require surgery, but if it did, now you're talking about at least somewhere between 8 and 12 weeks.
Wow.
Well, but it doesn't sound like it's going to require surgery.
Well, I'm sure they'll try everything they can or whatever to avoid having surgery. And just for the Jet fans and, you know, everybody, the great thing is Tyrod Taylor is the backup.
All right, well.
And but I know he gets, but Tyrod gets Taylor. Hurt. Okay, but maybe not. He's got a really good offensive line in front of him now. Yeah, the play calling is going to be different. I think he's a great backup for many reasons. And what he will do, even if he's playing really well, he's the kind of guy, he will push it towards Justin Fields. In other words, okay. And
Garrett Wilson. But he'll push the ball towards Garrett Wilson.
No, right? I'm saying he's going to, even though Justin Fields is probably sitting there and watching him play, if he plays well, Tyrod Taylor's not going to, he's going to deflect. He's going to do what he was brought there or assigned to do, to be the backup to Justin Fields and to help him become the quarterback that everybody hopes he turns into.
So here's the interesting thing from my perspective, as we're talking to Phil Simms this morning, sitting in for Gio, is exactly what Aaron Glenn has done since he's got here. And how he's gone about his business as a head coach, what he and Darren Mooji have done over there. And I don't know if you noticed this. I don't know if you feel the same way that we feel over here. But for the last 6 months, man, there is nothing coming out of that building.
I love it. Yeah.
Nothing. Yep. I mean, it's been totally on lockdown. I'm assuming because Aaron Glenn, you know, coached under Dan Campbell. He played under Bill Parcells. He was with, I think, Sean Payton down in New Orleans.
Yes, he was.
So he's been like in that kind of group of coaches. And Parcells, the one that sits on top, that's the Parcells tree, that it sounds to me like he is going to make this camp really competitive. And he is not going to mess around. And by them doing something unprecedented, signing Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner to contracts when they didn't have to, makes me think that, you know, he's going to rely on those two guys to take the hard coaching, the competitive coaching, and hopefully get this team on the straight and narrow.
Boomer, everybody better be ready to take the hard coaching. I can't wait to see him on the sidelines in a real game. It's going to be such a contrast to what was there before. He's going to be into the offense, into the defense. He's going to coach both, manage the game. I think he'll be a great game manager because that Bill Parcells, to me, was the best game manager I've ever seen in the NFL. And Dan Campbell's not bad at it either.
Dan Campbell's aggressive. Bill Parcells, in my eyes, was probably one of the most aggressive coaches on fourth down. When he was coaching, back when going for it on fourth down wasn't the in thing.
Right.
And nowadays, you got the Dan Campbells of the world, you got the Frank Reichs of the world, who when they were coaching or when Frank was coaching, they would go for it all the time on fourth down if they were in, you know, outside of their 35-yard line.
A couple things. I like head coaches that get involved on both sides of the football during game day. I like that a lot. And I really judge, the one thing I do judge, being in the business we're in, that I judge coaches hard about managing the game.
Sure.
And, you know, just think, the Chicago Bears. I mean, come on. They had about four or five games. They go, we're leading. We got a chance to win, but we don't want to. We're going to screw it up. And, no, I mean, it was really incredible to watch them play.
Or they're just sitting on the ball and they're not playing offense.
Oh, my gosh. Managing the clock, the situations, it couldn't have been worse. So, but that's what you know, it's a big deal. The outcomes of NFL games are so close. You need a coach that really is good at managing the whole game, the time, and his players. And I think Aaron Glenn has a chance to be that guy.
Well, I hope he's going to be that guy. So we got Phil Simms all morning this morning. You can call us at 888-808-1019. That is the hotline for Al. And we can talk a little bit of football this morning. The baseball teams did not play last night. A couple trades, I think, in Major League Baseball. CeeLo will have those.
So we just did this. This is cool. I remember filling this out. The Lord knows it took long enough to fill out. So we're doing this. It's a quarter century, WFAN quarter century team. And it's going to encompass all the sports and obviously the first 25 years of the century. And thanks to our sponsor Cash App for stepping in and having some fun with this as well. And, you know, and it just reinforces how pathetic it's been from a Jets. Now, the Giants' perspective has been tough lately, too. But I'm looking at this, and I can't even really argue much. So the way we did it, we were you know, sent this email. We went through all the different positions, like, hey, pick the top four wide receivers, pick the two best center fielders, pick the two best two guards, whatever. You know, Knicks, Nets, all the teams represented. And then they tallied up the results, and here we are. And I'm looking at the offense, right? And I really can't. I mean, from an emotional perspective, I can probably quibble a little bit. Like, I would put Krebet there, and I remember voting for Wayne. You know, but if you really think about it, Wayne's damage, like, most of his statistical damage was done in the 90s. Remember, he came up in 95, 96 with Kotite, and then played, you know, with Parcells, and then Keyshawn, and he had 1,000 yards, and he was awesome. But, you know, once you got into 2000, which is what this is about, he kind of tailed off a little bit. So I say this because it's so giant heavy on the offensive end. And again, I can't really push back too much. Shout out to our guy, my guy, Tiki. Of course, Teak's going to make it. And Curtis Martin. Now, there's an argument. Like, who is better, Curtis or Tiki? But I'm looking at this, and there's three Jets out of the 11 that made it on offense. It's Curtis. It is Nick Mangold, terrific center. And, of course, big breakover on the tackle, at one of the tackle spots. And you know, I look around, I'm like, all right, obviously Tiki's got to be there. Amani's there. Beckham's there. Plex is there. Victor Cruz is there. Shockey's obviously there. The second tight end was Kevin Boss. It just shows you how many, you know, wasteland seasons we've had a tight end for both of these teams. But obviously Shockey was a horse. And then you got Deal, Chris Snee, O'Hara, and then Brick and Mangle round out the line. So three of 11 are Jets. And then I go to defense. And again, I think for the most part it's done right. On defense, four of the 11 are Jets, or if you want me to say it, Giant fans, if you're sensitive, seven of the 11 are Giants. Now, the four Jets, though, would be Quinnen Williams, which I think makes sense, Mo Lewis. I don't know about that. And I could push back a little bit on that. Remember, Mo was up here in the 90s, too, doing a lot of damage. This is just from 2000 on. Darrell Revis. And is that it? Who am I missing? And Vilma. I could probably push back on that, too. But you just look everywhere. Justin Tuck, Dexter Lawrence, Michael Strahan, AP, you know, Antro Roll, Seahorn. Even the kicker and the coach go to the Giants. So it's a quarter century look at Jets and Giants football. If you guys want to check it out, again, thanks to our sponsor, Cash App. They jumped in. This is cool. We'll do this for all the sports. It's on Soch. It's everywhere. Go check it out. And just to jump in, you know, to another thing about the Jets here, football. Oh, boy. You know, I won't say I was surprised when we got the news about the contract. I was on vacation, but both contract announcements there with Sauce and with Garrett Wilson. Now, Garrett Wilson, to me, was a no-brainer. I do think last year, I was vacillating a little bit. I wasn't sure, like, because Sauce's indifference and or inability to tackle is a massive problem. Now, I think one thing that's going to be different, I think that Aaron Glenn's going to deploy him very differently. And, you know, if Aaron Glenn, who looked at every single snap of every single player, I'm not saying he's, you know, the main voice in, when it's that kind of money, but I'm sure they ran it by him. Hey, coach, what do you think? You know, you're a former corner, and I saw Aaron play, and Aaron was good, so I trust his instincts there. You know, you'd have to think that Aaron Glenn is going to say, all right, hey, number one receiver, go follow him. I don't know why Robert Saleh didn't do that. There's just certain things with certain coaches that are just so basic, especially with Saleh, that were just so dumb. Like, how the hell is Sauce Gardner not traveling with the main offensive target vertically for every opposing team? And he didn't do it. It's just crazy. So I think you'll be able to do some things with run support to help him out. And quite frankly, I think just think Aaron Glenn's going to get in his ass and make him learn how to tackle. So, I don't want to get too in the weeds football. It's still July here. But just conceptually, I love what the Jets did here. But I had to be fair because there were points last year where Gardner really bothered me to the point where I was calling him Soft Gardner on the Unkillable Pod and on the air. You know, like he just had an aversion to tackling. You know, it's one thing if you throw your shoulder pads in there and you're just not a great textbook tackler. But, I mean, that's a problem in itself if you want to be the best in the game and the highest paid. But it's quite another thing when you just don't seem to really care to try to deliver a lick. And too much, he was soft. That's going to change, I trust. And, you know, just I would say bigger picture here, it's nice to have a little stability. You know, I get it. You could make the case, well, Garrett Wilson's a wide receiver. Wide receiver's a dime a dozen. He's not 6'4". He's not like a Megatron game changer or something like that. I get it. You know, Sauce with the tackling. All right, I get it. But at some point, if you want to become a functional, respected, consistent organization with continuity, which, by the way, is how you get all the other aforementioned things there, you got to have continuity. If you start over every 2 years, it's just a disaster from a coaching perspective and from a personnel perspective. So this is really encouraging. I'm pumped up that this offseason has been very quiet for the Jets. It's refreshing. And I've also been honest enough to tell you that, you know, like an idiot, I took the cheese last year and I took the cheese the year before with Aaron Rodgers. You know, I took the cheese in the comeback and I took the cheese in the acquisition. And I took the cheese with, you know, all these, seven or eight primetime games. And, you know, finally we matter and people are going to pay attention to us. And I don't dislike Aaron like a lot of you do or some of you do. Actually, I like Aaron. I think the organization was so bad that they failed him and he got hurt, you know. But he's gone, so I'm not going to waste a lot of time on him. But it was fun to feel relevant, you know. And what I said when we talked about me and Sal before the schedules came out for this year, I'm like, just let me operate in anonymity. I don't want Sunday night. I don't want Thursday night. Don't give me Monday night. I don't even need, you know, 425 with Nance and Romo. Just bury me at 1 and let me just live my little tiny, for now, menial football existence and just see if Aaron Glenn is going to be the guy that I think he's going to be. No bold proclamations. Oh, we finally got the Super Bowl. Nobody wants to hear it. I don't want to say it. Nobody cares. We've all looked like fools a million ways sideways with these ridiculous opinions and convictions with the Jets. So I'm going to wait and see. But in my gut, I do feel like it's the right hire now. Because Robert Saleh, you know, looked like Tarzan, and he coached like Jane. Aaron Glenn looks a little bit like Tarzan, and you just know he ain't coaching like Jane. He's just not. Muji, I got to see. I'm optimistic, but I don't know. But Glenn just, he strikes me as, again, the right guy at the right time. And if they deliver these long-term commitments to two young players, one on each side of the ball, you know, Q's already got a deal. We'll see if the old line's taking shape. I think they're going to commit to the run. I think they're going to be buttoned up. They're going to practice hard. They're going to hit. They're going to play with integrity. Like, that's at least a basic starting point. So I was pumped with the extensions. I've been very happy with the quiet nature to the offseason. And now it's, you know, this week, Wednesday. And obviously the Giants this week as well. But now you'll start seeing the story. And this is where it gets fun. And I know that we kind of lean on this a little bit much, but we're jonesing for football. A little bit too much. But we're jonesing for football nuggets. You know, you start seeing the tweets. I remember even going back to Darnold and Zach and Rodgers. Oh, look at how he's doing 7-on-7s, touchdowns. Like, we will overreact to a player getting burned or a QB throwing a bad pick. We will. That's what we do. Because until there's real football, there's this stuff. Imaginary football, because training camp is a joke these days. And we'll eat it up and we'll react. But I got to tell you, just on a big, and I've said this before, so this is not a surprise, but since we're almost here, I'll say it again. On a big, broad, macro level assessment, anticipation, obviously hope. I mean, you're always hopeful, but rooted in a little bit more conviction than not, I think it's going to be an enjoyable season for both the Jets and the Giants. I do. I think we were very frustrated with Saleh and the softness with the Jets and the mess that they were. And obviously Daniel Jones, yeah, you got to move on. It's over. You know, and if the coach and the GM don't do well this year, then they're probably gone as well. But, you know, at least now you have Jackson Dart in the pipeline. So if Russell Wilson doesn't play well, you got some hope there. And we all love the DeVito story, but let's come on. He doesn't have that kind of talent where Dart does. And he could be a 10, 12, 13, 15-year quarterback for the Giants. Because one thing about the Giants, when they get it right, they usually get it right. For a while, you know, Phil was hurt early, but they got it right with Phil. They got it right with Eli. Jets aren't so lucky. I just feel both teams are going to be better this year. It could be a fun football season. And by fun, I mean competitive and a few more wins and maybe not dead by Halloween. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the fan. Let me get Timmy and Mayapak. Tim, what's going on?
Hey, BT. With the trade deadline coming up with the Yankees, I think they have too many missing pieces. I think it's a mistake to get Suarez. In Arizona, he's got a smaller ballpark there. I don't know how many home runs he's going to hit Yankee Stadium. And I would bring up Lombard, get his feet wet at third base.
They're not calling him up. They're not calling him up. Timmy, I don't mean to cut you off, but you got to speak in reality. They're not calling up Lombard this year.
Yeah. Okay, but they're missing too many pieces. It's a mistake to get rid of Jones and delete your farm system for a team that's missing so many pieces.
Yep. Yeah,
so I disagree with that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. The first thing you said was you don't want Suarez, okay? And he's an awful defender, strikes out a ton. I get you. I got to let you go. It's a little bit too much feedback. I was going to ask you, but I can't. It's too much. I'm torn with him. Because they can't not do anything at third base. Like, they have to do something. That's a given. And I don't know, maybe it becomes McMahon or something else there. But if you get Suarez, you are getting a very flawed player. What he's good at, he's really good at. What he's not good at, he's bad at. And what he's bad at usually buries you in October. Doesn't catch it. and he strikes out a ton. So that's a tough call. That's a tough call. Now, if you walk away with Merrill Kelly as well and the relief pitcher, I know that that was out there, and you just do one big trade with the D-backs, and you don't have to give up, I mean, obviously not giving up Spencer Jones or Lombard in that situation. I'm not saying I'm not amenable to it, but I don't think it solves everything. I really don't. So it's going to be a tough call. I don't know. Let me get Anthony in down in Tampa, BT and Sal on the Fan. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, BT, thank you for taking the call.
My pleasure.
Awesome. So first of all, I wanted to wonderfully said about David Wright. I'm a Mets fan. I know you're a Yankees fan, so I thought you said everything that needed to be said. Great job with that. But I did actually want to, about the Jets, the one thing that I'm hoping Aaron Glenn does better than anybody else is stop these stupid penalties.
Oh, God.
Because more often than not, how many times will we, you know, we had them pinned 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 12, and it's a stupid late hit on a quarterback or something like that. And if he could curb that, that's 3 or 4 wins right there, at least in my opinion.
Well, I don't know about 3 or 4, but it's a great starting point, Anthony, and I'm with you on that. Like, you know, the Jets just aren't good enough and have not been good enough to overcome the barrage of penalties that they subjected us to every single Sunday. I mean, this time you're watching 12, 13 penalties, 120 yards. What? Come on. With a pop gun offense? Yeah. They're going to overcome that. I think the Jets are going to run I think they're going to strive to run the ball 30 times a game this year. Now, there'll be games, maybe a kickoff return, a fumble brought back to the house. You look up, it's football. It's going to even happen to a good team where they're down quickly 17-3, 17-0, 14-zip, 20-3, 21-0, 21-3, 24-3. That's going to happen. And when that happens, now you become very predictable. Then, you know, Justin Fields better runner than thrower. And then it's, you know, that's not a good situation for the Jets, really. But I think their defense is going to be really good. It's going to be good. I think it's going to have a chance to be really good. I think their O-line is going to be a lot better. I think there's going to be many fewer penalties. I think special teams will be better. People forget Aaron Glenn was a special team ace, man. He was good. So if they could, of the 17 games, if you can, they're going to have 2 or 3 duds right away. So, but if you could have like, meaning out of the chute, those sloppy one-sided scores that I just gave you where you have to abandon the run just to kind of get back in it. But of the, you know, 13 or 14 other games, like-ish, you're going to be able to run. And you're going to be able to run it, I would say, 22 times, roughly, conventionally, with running backs. And then, you know, 7 to 10 times a game with Justin Fields. 6 or so of the design variety. And, you know, 2, 3, 4, depending upon what's going on and who you're playing, weather, whatever, where he just tucks it and he makes people miss because he's a great athlete. He's a great runner. And, you know, when you do that, and you run the ball well, this is not breaking news, but the Jets have not done this forever, and it's such a boring watch. Like, but if you can do this, you know, crank out, hey, 1st and 10, Jets at their own 25, yeah, run 5 yards. Oh, wow, what do you know, 2nd and 5. Now the entire playbook is open, and Fields can tuck and run. He could do an option. You could hit a tight end. What a concept, hit the tight end down the seam. You know, you could just do things. And I think that they're going to really do that. And I think it's going to lead to a much more competitive season. Let me get Eric in Massapequa, BT and Sal on the Fan. What's up, Eric?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm hearing a lot of people talking about, like, oh, I can't trade Jones, can't trade Jones. Why is no one talking about calling Jones up? Like, I don't understand.
I brought it up. I said it.
No, I know you did, but, like, nobody else is saying it. It's everything I hear is, oh, we can't trade him. ESPN's saying it. CBS.
ESPN knows nothing about. ESPN knows absolutely nothing about baseball. ESPN.
They know nothing about sports now.
Lost.
They're a joke. That's a different topic. Anyway, but like, this kid is absolutely killing it. He's currently the best hitter by a large margin in the minors. I don't understand why he's not up. You know, and that's leading to the whole having a third baseman.
Hold on, let me ask you a question. Okay, now I think it's a little unconventional, a little bit early at this point. I did bring it up, so I don't think you're nuts. But if you bring him up, where's he playing? What are you doing?
See, I figured Judge will DH one day, Jones plays.
Okay.
Belly goes to first base one day, Jones plays. Dominguez sits a day because for whatever reason they love sitting him anyway, so they might as well get Jones in then. Have him DH a day. Like, they could find 4 or 5 days a week this kid's playing.
I don't know about 4 or 5. I mean, it's a little tough with Ben Rice and, you know, the Grisham and obviously Goldschmidt and Dominguez. 4 or 5 is a lot.
You know what, I'm not married to Goldschmidt. I love what he's done for us.
I agree with you.
I am more inclined to having Rice and him split time. Wells, I'm not sold on, so Rice can play a game or two behind the plate.
Mm-hmm.
They need a spark. And they're not, like, I'm watching them, you know, run the bases, get thrown out, throwing, you know, not turning easy double plays. They need a spark. This kid is killing it right now.
I know he is.
And he's doing the whole season. Like, I just, and obviously they need a third baseman. That's an entire other topic. Because Suarez, I like, he's a nice player, but he's also 34 years old.
Yep.
I've had him on, like, my fantasy team for years. Like, he's a very streaky player, and he's exactly what you said. He's exactly what you don't need in the playoffs. He's either going to strike out or hit a home run, and he can't field.
Well, Eric, that's why I'm trying to find somebody here that is going to bring something to the table if he has an 0-for-4 game. I hear you. I mean, guys, haven't we been? I'm not saying that I'll get on the air and protest vehemently if they get Suarez. I got to see what they give up. I got to see if other third basemen are indeed traded. If they're not, well, then maybe the Rockies just didn't give up on McMahon or whatever it might be, or Arenado, even though the Yankees don't want Arenado. Like, I'd have to read other situations, so I can't really tell you my reaction fully now. But I know he's a masher, and I know he's better than what's over there now. You have to upgrade, but, you know, you're going to get him for a couple of months here. He's basically his mid-30s, and he's a butcher at third. He whiffs all the time. He doesn't have great speed. So if he goes 0-for-4 with 2 punch-outs in October against Seattle or against the Astros or Toronto, what is he doing? He's doing nothing else of value. That's a problem. And we've seen that forever with the Yankees. So I'm trying to preemptively guard against that. If there's nobody else, of course I'll take him. Because he can hit bombs. And you might, you know, listen, he might be like Cespedes with the Mets in 2015, even though Cespedes is a much better all-around player. It's not a great comparison, but I'm talking about just bringing a little juice with some thump. Now, Cespedes could run. He had a cannon. A different profile. Younger, much more dynamic. It's not apples to apples, but could he have an impact? I mean, he can come here, he can hit the hell out of the baseball, or he can hit 190 and strike out 26% of the time, which is pretty much what he does anyway. I don't know.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Bill Ford Tough Studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Talked a lot about the baseball. You can go back to the 6 a.m. hour on the free Odyssey app. Check out the Mets and Yankees talk from then. Jerry's going to detail it again coming up at 9:25. Obviously, the Mets with a great series at home before heading west, and the Yankees with a rough one in Toronto. That's been the story for them the entire year, up in Toronto, only getting one of the three against the Blue Jays, now 4 games back. Got training camps opening, and I saw a story by one of the Jets beat writers yesterday. It was Cimini, who said that Aaron Glenn woke up at 3:30 in the morning before his first practice, could not go back to sleep, and was just pacing around thinking about this. You know, I criticized the hire, didn't like it, because I felt like the Jets at this point in their history needed someone with experience and a name that was immediately respected when it was put on the office door. I'm not saying that Aaron Glenn isn't respected. He is. He just hasn't done the job before. But, you know, I'm not going to do the whole feels different thing. I refuse to do that. I will say, though, that this man is pouring every single ounce of him into this job, is as serious as could possibly be, is working his ass off, and wanted to take this on. Not a lot of people did. And if I'm going to be positive about it, it's that this is one of the few people in the NFL who chose the Jets over other opportunities. And I'm not sure if there was someone else that would have done that, that was qualified or was in that group of next head coaches. You know, maybe some guy who was a special teams coach somewhere is like, hell, they're going to give me a head coaching job. But as far as like the top candidates, I don't think any of them were looking at the Jets. And Aaron Glenn certainly was, and being with the organization at their worst times and their best times. But yeah, I'm curious to see how it works out. I just hope he's not too much of a hard ass on these guys and burns them out.
I think initially he has to be, and it's one of the reasons why you do unprecedented things by giving your two young stars contracts before you have 2 years before you have to do it. You know, most guys get it going into their fifth year and they'll have played 4, but to get a contract extension after 3 years that's precedent setting. And I think part of that is to make sure that those guys realize that the Jets believe in those two players, but those two players are going to have to make sure that they support the coach and what the coach wants. And, you know, he's not stupid. They're going to try to recreate what they did in Detroit. I think he has a better roster right now than Detroit did when Dan Campbell first got there. And the first thing that they did is they traded Matthew Stafford and they brought in Jared Goff. And so the first thing that Aaron Glenn did was basically tell Aaron Rodgers to take a hike and we're going to bring in Justin Fields. So they took out what would be the biggest impediment to kind of put in their way of doing things. If you want to call it culture, that's fine. But I think it's Parcellian-like. It's very controlling. They've been on lockdown. They have not been the offseason story this year, except for those two contracts that they gave out and the fact that he's the new head coach. Other than that, you haven't heard anything. You haven't seen any, like, behind-the-scenes stories. You haven't, you know, you haven't heard from any of the reporters that have covered the Jets over the last few years, who always seem to have a conduit to inside information.
Yeah, and the only time you heard from anybody with the team was right after the Aaron Rodgers decision, and a couple players went to X about it, and then after that, you haven't heard anything. It was sort of shut down. And I'm sure when, you know, Darren Mooji and Aaron Glenn and the other new members of the organization came in, they were probably tired of reading the stuff from The Athletic, the Zach Rosenblatt, Diana Russini stuff, and Brick Johnson this and this player that and Woody said this to this guy and all of these things, you know. And that's why those buyouts were offered to a lot of the people in the building, because they wanted to clean out as many of the people that, you know, maybe were saying those things,
or maybe they just felt like they got too big, you know, and they wanted to call out some of the employees and give them an opportunity to take a buyout that was very generous, by the way.
Yeah.
And once they sent that out, and if you did not take the buyout, then basically they could fire you. You know, they could feel and say, look, we offered you a buyout, but I don't know how many people ended up getting fired. I have no idea. You know, maybe it was just overstaffed, too many people, whatever the case may be. But I just going back to Aaron Glenn, and, you know, I felt this way listening to him in his first opening press conference, and I feel this way now. He's just going to make this a very competitive camp. And he's going to make it tough, and they're going to be hitting in camp, and they're going to make sure that they are ready for the season. And like I said, if he is a guy that, you know, couldn't sleep, you know, that's a good sign, actually. It means a lot to him, and he wants to be successful. Just hopefully, you know, Justin Fields will be a player that can get him some wins, and Justin will be able to do something that no Jet quarterback has done in a long time, and that is be able to run with the ball and make first downs. You just hope that his accuracy and his anticipation is improving each and every year he's in the NFL, and he's comfortable in this offense that is being run by a first-time offensive coordinator.
Yep, and I feel like we've said that every single time the Jets have hired a new staff. This is a first time this guy, this is a first time that guy, and it never seems to work out, but this is a different group, got to give him an opportunity. And the very exact opposite situation that the Giants are in. I mean, they're going to get some leeway. Leg room here.
They'll get
some
leeway. Yeah. Sure.
But, and the Giants will not, after being here for a number of years, Shane and Daboll, and spinning their wheels a bunch.